Well, I'm honored to be preaching tonight, and I'm definitely looking forward to seeing what God does with the youth conference. And how many of you have been praying for youth conference? Would you raise your hand? Well, I hope so. Such a vital meeting, and I've chuckled all week long. For 13 years, I was a youth pastor in West Virginia, and I would bring groups here. And we would do all the fundraising and all the things that go into bringing a group here. And there's a lot of work that goes into it, the travel and raising the money and getting the hotel accommodations, just chaperones, just all that stuff. And so I would do it and did it for 13 years. And I would think to myself when I got here, I would think, man, it must be nice. You know, must be nice to just be here in Hammond and not really have to do any work. I mean, all the youth conference comes to you. I mean, you didn't have to go anywhere. And God must have a sense of humor because for the last several years, this time of the year, you know, I wake up in the middle of the night just sweating, thinking about midway booths falling apart and signs not working. And I mean, there's so many details that go into youth conference. And the truth is there's a lot of work happening everywhere here and people outside of here that are bringing their groups, and just a lot of work for a week like this to be successful. And so I'm thankful, and it really would be a shame to have all of that work take place and to not be praying. Man said, work like it depends on you and pray like it depends on God. And now it's the time, really, now it's been past time, but it's definitely time now to be praying like it depends on God. And I'm excited to see what God does. I owe a great debt to this church and to the people that have gone on before me. There's a great debt that's owed. And my testimony is well known in this place and in a lot of places, but I was saved on a Monday night at Jordan Baptist Church, not too far from here, but I was a teenager and really lost and confused, and mom and dad had separated, and I was just in the world. Really wasn't looking for God. I was looking for something. I didn't know what it was. But I got saved through the bus ministry at Jordan Baptist Church. I'll never forget that. It was a Monday night in September. And it was a great night. It was the greatest night of my life. And about 9 months later, in Koshkonong, Missouri, on a Thursday night, I was called to preach. I don't remember much about the week of camp. I really don't. And I've got a weird memory when it comes to these sort of things. I tend to remember even details, but of preaching and messages and preachers, and I don't remember much about the week. And I think God has done that on purpose. It was my first week of camp. I do remember I was nervous to ride a horse, and I had never really left the city. And so they kind of used that as like a promotion. You're going to ride horses. And I thought, man, I don't want to ride a horse, you know. And they put me on this massive horse named Domino. I don't remember the night of it, but Domino. And I was scared to death of Domino. I remember that. And then I remember that Thursday night. Whatever the preacher preached is lost to me. But when he said, would you bow your head and close your eyes? I remember doing that. And almost immediately, I didn't hear a voice. It wasn't an audible voice, but it was a definite impression on my heart. It was just as if it were an audible voice. It was God saying, Abdel, I want you to spend your whole life doing that. I want you to preach. I didn't understand it all, and I was so new even to Christianity, but it was loud and clear. And I remember going to an altar and surrendering my life, and that was on a Thursday night. And then about 6 weeks later, I came here to Hammond. And in between that Thursday night of surrendering to preach and the 6 week, the coming here for youth conference, that camp and youth conference, in between, it was just it was perhaps the most difficult trial that I've ever been through. As I went back to my dad and told him that God had called me. He didn't understand it, and he wasn't happy about it. And I remember all of that and kind of being told to leave the house and just dealing with that. And thinking to myself, you know, maybe God didn't call me, and just replaying all of that in my mind. And really for 6 weeks, just wondering if the decision I made was real and maybe God made a mistake and all of those things that a teenager would be confused about. If I surrendered to do something right, why is this happening? And all of that. And just, I remember coming to youth conference, and I've told the story before, but sitting up in the balcony of the Jack Hiles Auditorium. And on the first night of youth conference, Brother Hiles standing up to preach a message, and God using that message. The title of the message was, "I've opened my mouth unto the Lord and I cannot go back." And I feel like he just said that phrase, just that, 1,000 times. "I've opened my mouth unto the Lord and I cannot go back." It was on the story of Jephthah. But what happened in my heart was God took a stake a mile wide, and he drove it 10 miles deep into my heart. And when I left that night, with all the confusion and all the questions about the future, I remember coming to the altar and saying, "I've got one thing settled. I mean, I cannot go back. I cannot go back." And all these years later, every time I've been tempted to turn around and quit, I've just remembered that decision at youth conference. I cannot go back. And so I owe a great debt to this place, to youth conference in particular, to the people who before I ever got here, labored and had vision. People like Brother Hiles had vision. People like Brother Eddie. All these youth conferences and still working, and staff that has come and gone, but yet poured their life and blood, sweat, and tears into this meeting. I owe a great, 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 great debt. And now our own pastor, and the vision that he has, and the team of people that work together on youth conference, and myself, and Brother Ricky, and Brother Dwight, and Brother Nelson, and I shouldn't name names, but Brian and Courtney, and so many people that work together, Brother Wes, and just so many to make youth conference happen, and so many more. I think about the fact that now it's our time, and these teenagers, They need youth conference to be as powerful for them today as it was for me all those years ago. And so that's really what it's all about. And not really with that thought in mind, but just with some of those thoughts. We're in the book of Haggai, and I know Pastor's been preaching from here, been preaching from Ezra. And so I wanted to just bring some thoughts from this passage of Scripture. We know that Haggai is a post-exilic prophet, meaning that his story takes place after the exile. His name means celebration. Celebration. And if you know anything about the prophets, you think to yourself, what is there to celebrate? I mean, their message typically was a message of judgment. They preached to people who did not listen. You think of men like Isaiah and Jeremiah, that Jeremiah would go on to write the Lamentation as he saw the judgment of God kind of play out. And so many of the prophets were that way. Yet Haggai is, he gives us reason to celebrate. He's been called the successful prophet. He was one of the few prophets, if not the only prophet, who saw the fruit of his ministry. He saw actual results, good results. And just in thinking about this today, I thought, man, that is a reason to celebrate whenever people actually listen to the sermon and respond. That's a reason to celebrate. And so it's that's his name. He's the first of the post-exilic books. You can study him alongside the book of Ezra. And the book concentrates on the temple being rebuilt. King Cyrus has issued a decree that the people of Israel can go back home, and they can go back to Jerusalem, back from exile, and 50,000 of those people decide to head back. They go back in three different waves. We know that Zerubbabel would lead a group back, and Ezra would lead a group back. Haggai is a prophet that would go back in that first return. 50,000 people returned back to Jerusalem. They all should have returned. All of them should have left and gone back home, but only 50,000 return. And that shows us that most were comfortable in a foreign land. And friends, it doesn't take long for you and I to get used to places and people that we have no business being around as a child of God. And so we see that happening here, but 50,000 do return. And they come back and they find Jerusalem and particularly the temple in ruins. It's destroyed. And so they get back to the work of rebuilding. They have good intentions. And if you read Ezra chapter 1, 2, chapter 3, and chapter 4, as he recounts the story, you'll see that the first thing that they did was rebuild an altar. They rebuilt the altar of the Lord. This was where they communicated with God. This was their means to come to God, the altar. And by the way, the altar is still, it's still a good place. And we don't need an altar to communicate with God anymore, to come to God. But the thought is still there. There's something wonderful about coming to an altar and talking to God. They rebuild the altar. They rebuild the foundation of the temple. And they do that for 2 years. It's hard work. The temple is made of stone and heavy lifting, and they do this hard work. And then the kind of the context of where we're going tonight, everything comes to a grinding halt. They stop the work. They stop the building, the house of God. Opposition has come, and so for 14 years, they don't swing a hammer, they don't fasten a nail. Nothing is done for 14 years. The foundation of the temple's been laid, but now it's just sitting there. And that's kind of the context of the book. That's the state that the people of God are in. They've done some work, but now it's dormant. There's a problem. The house of God needs to be built, and the people aren't doing it. They're facing opposition. They're listening to the lies of the enemy. And so now for some time, the construction project has halted. And God raises up Haggai. And I like him. I like this character in the Bible. I like him because he's a preacher. And God raises up Haggai. He is a preacher. He's a little older. And he sends him back to Jerusalem to preach four sermons. We believe these four sermons were preached in about a span of 4 months. They're dated in the book of Haggai. You can read them. And I love the fact that God places a premium on preaching. I love the fact that when there was a problem, God sent a preacher. When there was a situation, God sent a sermon. When there were some trials, God sent some timeless truths. I love the fact that he places a premium on preaching. And my friends, while it's not the message, I do think that you and I need to once again place a premium on preaching. Preaching is God's chosen method to deliver his truth. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse number 21, that in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God. It pleased God by the foolishness of preaching to save them which would believe. The Apostle Paul would say in chapter 2, verse number 4, he said, my speech and my preaching was not with enticing words of man's wisdom, but in demonstration of the Spirit and of power, that your faith should not stand in the wisdom of men, but in the power of God. I understand that what I preach determines not only what people believe, but how they believe. And so preaching is important. In 1 Timothy, Paul said that he was ordained a preacher. Jesus came to Galilee in Mark chapter number 1, preaching the gospel. Isaiah called himself a preacher. Noah was a preacher of righteousness. Jonah was called to Nineveh to preach to Nineveh. Matthew chapter number 3 says that in those days came John the Baptist preaching preaching. Acts chapter 8 says that they were scattered abroad. They went everywhere preaching the word. And so friend, today in America, even at youth conference, we need to put a premium on the preaching of the Bible. It is still important. It's still important. I was taught back in the day that when I am preaching, I am persuading men. Acts chapter 14, verse number 1. I love it. It says, and it came to pass in Iconium that they went both together into the synagogue of the Jews and so spake that a great multitude, both of the Jews and also of the Greeks, believed. And I believe it was Tom Malone who said what America needs are some so speakers. We need some preaching. Preaching in such a way that great multitudes are once again persuaded of the truth of God. You see, cancel culture wants to rob us of an authoritative voice. They really do. They want the church to be silent. Preachers are afraid to boldly proclaim the Bible. But let me just say, if you are preaching the Bible, then you have the authority of God Almighty on the message. And friend, we need to place a premium on preaching once again. Some quotes that have motivated me through the years: preaching is teaching with a tear in the eye. Preaching is the gift of God wrapped in an excited voice. Preaching is truth set on fire. That's one of my favorite verses quotes. John Wesley said about preaching, I just set myself on fire and people come to watch me as I burn. Richard Baxter delivered my favorite quote on preaching when he said, I preach as never sure to preach again as a dying man to dying men. I can remember back in the day preaching one of my early teen camps way back years ago, and a man coming up to me and saying, you know, Abdel, I think that maybe God has his hand on you, and I think that maybe you have some gifts and some tools. Just think about this. How many more people could you reach if you didn't preach so loud and if you didn't preach so long? And he kind of said that to me, and I listened to him, and he was a little older, and I respected him, but I walked away and I thought, man, it is just not in me. I'm just not wired that way. I want to preach as never sure to preach again as a dying man to dying men. One man said, if the people are asleep, wake up the preacher. Man, I like that. John Newton said, preaching is breaking the hard heart and healing the broken one. Richard Watley said, preach not because you have to say something, but because you have something to say. Brooks said, preaching is truth delivered through personality. God using our personality to deliver his truth. And that's exactly what's going to take place at youth conference, that these men have assembled, and God is going to use their personalities to deliver his truth. Friend, preaching is still the answer. It's still the answer. I love the music of youth conference. I love the decorations of youth conference, the creative elements and all that we're going to do, maybe to see something a little different. I love that stuff. But friends, America still needs preaching, and teenagers still need preaching, and you and I need it. And we need to learn to respond to the preaching of the Bible. And so Haggai comes along and God gives him four sermons. Four messages. You know, and again, it's not the message, but I thought, I just putting this together, I thought, didn't take much. I mean, if the message is from God and the people will listen and respond, it doesn't take a lot for things to start moving. I mean, four messages, four sermons, but the people actually listened, they actually responded, and the work of God was completed. It doesn't take much if people will preach in the power of God, listen, and respond in the power of God. I've told the story before. I love telling the story. I just love telling it because it reminds me of times when I was young. And but growing up in Chicago, I never went to church. And at the time, I listened to just about every genre of music. But at the time that I got saved, I was listening to rap music. And I could name all the artists and all the people, and it's terrible, but I didn't know any better, and that's what everybody in the neighborhood listened to. That's what I was listening to. I brought a friend to church. His name was Joe. Joe came to church. He loved rock music. I mean, he loved it. All the classic bands, all the 60s, 70s, kind of that golden era of rock music. If you don't know what I'm talking about, Brother Eddie can fill you in afterward. No, but He loved it. And I was sitting there at my very first Sunday night, to bring a visitor to come to like youth group. And the youth pastor stood up and he is preaching against rock music and I am loving it. I'm sitting there and my friend loves rock music and the youth pastor is naming groups that he listens to that I know he listens to. He's reading lyrics of songs that he listens to that I know he's talking, but he's going on. If you play it backwards, you know, you'll hear the voice of the devil. And I mean, he's going through all this stuff. And I am just loving it because my friend is next to me and he's squirming. He's just like, ah, he's sweating, you know. I mean, there's only like 20 of us in the room and here the youth pastor is just gun barrel straight going after rock music. And my friend Joe is just squirming in his seat. I think it's the best thing in the whole wide world. When it was over, Joe left. I walked right up to the youth pastor, stuck my hand out and I said, man, I said, that was great. I said, Joe loves rock music. I said, I listen to rap music. I'm good. And I walked away. And honestly, I mean, truthfully, that's how I felt. He didn't name my music. He didn't name my sin. I must be okay. I came the next Sunday night. Joe never came back, but I came. There's a lesson there too. But I came the next Sunday night. And the youth pastor decides, you know what? He had a message from God straight from heaven. It was on rap music. And I sat there and he started naming the very people I was listening to and reading their lyrics, the ones he could read and mispronouncing their names. But I knew where he was. I saw what he was stepping in. All right. And I thought, man, I think he's preaching this whole thing just to me. And he was preaching it just to me. And watch this. That very night, I had a decision to make. I was exposed to the truth of God through the preaching of the Bible. And now I had a decision to make. Man, am I going to accept it or am I going to reject it? And I could remember going through the whole gamut of emotions. That guy's preaching right at me and he shouldn't be. And this isn't right. And I'm looking around like, I don't think any of these other kids are listening to rap music. I mean, this is coming to me. And who does he think he is? And then listening and think, man, he's right. And God probably isn't pleased with that. And by the time it's over, making an internal decision, I need to get rid of this stuff. I need to listen. I remember getting a tape of the John R. Rice Daughters. You know, you remember that? I mean, John R. Rice had these daughters and they all sang together. And I remember popping that in, taking out my rap music, popping in the John R. Rice Daughters and listening to it, you know, and thinking, what is going on? And it's about as far apart as you can get is that right there. And I'm listening to it and I'm like, Lord, you know, I know this is good, but I don't like it very much, you know, but I cannot go back. But it's incredible how, hey, after a while, you know what? All I'm saying is this, it doesn't take much. Little bit of obedience, little bit of spirit-filled preaching, little bit of humility, and all of a sudden, man, your appetites begin to change. And I can remember singing those John R. Rice Daughter songs in my mind, and man, they motivated me and challenged me. And it doesn't take much, it won't take long for things to start heading in the right direction. I remember going to hear Dr. Lee Robertson preach. And I think it was at the Berean Baptist Church in Rockford, Illinois. Not 100% sure about that. But going to hear Dr. Lee Robertson, and he was in probably his 80s, his mid-80s, maybe. And I can remember going to hear him preach. I'm like 15 years old. And looking at that man stand up and just preach and thinking to myself as a teenager, man, I want to be like that someday. I mean, now, imagine that. What about it? What was going on that drew me to him? I mean, he's in his 80s. You know, I mean, there was nothing there that physically, I'll tell you what it was. He was still a man of God preaching with the power of God. And there is something very attractive, even to young people, when preaching is taking place the way it ought to take place. So Haggai preaches four sermons, four messages that motivated these people to do what needed to be done in their time. And I want to give you just those four thoughts as I see it, and we're going to be done. What did Haggai say to them? Well, number one, he said this. He told them that there's a danger of waiting when you should be working. It's dangerous to allow yourself to have an excuse while you're not engaged in the work of God. It's just dangerous. Chapter 1, verse number 4, you'll see it. He says this. He says, "Is it time for you, O ye, to dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste? Now therefore, saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." See, these people had an excuse. They said, it's just not the right time. Just not the right time to sell out. Just not the right time to put our hand to the plow. It's not the right time to be fully engaged in the work of God. And God sends a preacher along to say, man, you have time for everything else. You have time for family and friends and pleasures and vacations. You have time for business. But what about the house of God? What about the work of God? And he says this, he says it to him twice. He says, consider your ways. Verse number 5, he says, consider your ways. Verse number 7, he says, consider your ways. And church, I want to ask you tonight, if Haggai were preaching to you, hey, is it time yet to be engaged in the work of God? I mean, is it time yet to put our hand to the plow? Is it time to start swinging the hammer again? Is it time to start knocking on doors again? I mean, is it time right now? I think about the fact that time is short. I think about the fact that the days are evil. I think about that verse in Romans chapter number 13, verse number 11, where the apostle Paul said to those people, he said, knowing the time, that right now it is high time to awake out of sleep, for now is our salvation nearer than when we believed. Friend, I believe that the time is not tomorrow. It's not even Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of next week, but the time is right now to be motivated again, to get engaged in the work of God. Man, the time is right now. You consider the shape that our country is in. You think about it. Even the events of that unfolded last night, and boy, it's tragic. People are looking for answers. And here we are in the church, you and I know, hey, you and I know that the answer is not found in Republican or Democrat or White House or your house or my house. We all know that the answer is found right here in this book. The answer is found in God's house. Jesus is the answer. The gospel is the answer. America really doesn't need a change of government. America needs a change of heart. And that only comes through the power of God, through salvation. Paul said, I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God unto salvation to everyone that believeth. I mean, the gospel can save anybody on planet earth, but you and I need to be engaged in the work of the gospel. Man, we're building our houses and doing our thing, but what about God's work? Is it time? He said there is a danger in waiting when you should be working. There's a danger. The second thing that he said was this. There's a danger of living in the past and missing the future. He told these people who had stopped working, in so many words, he said, listen, you're living in the past. And that's dangerous. Chapter 2, verse number 3 and 4 of the book of Haggai. Who is left among you that saw this house in her first glory? And how do you see it now? Is it not in your eyes in comparison of it as nothing? You see, this temple wasn't as big. It wasn't as ornate. It wasn't as expensive. Frankly, it wasn't as impressive. And so God comes along and he says to a whole generation of people, he says, too many of you are thinking about the former temple. Too many of you got your mind stuck yesterday and the glory of the former temple. And you see, from time to time, we need to get past our past. These people were stuck in the past. The glory of the past temple, the way it used to be. Friends, I am thankful for the past victories, but you understand we need something for today. Amen. I need something fresh for tomorrow. Listen, man, I don't know how else to put it. I'm glad that the power of God rested on this place when I needed it as a 14-year-old. And I'm glad that I heard from heaven. But there's going to be 14-year-olds sitting here tomorrow and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday. And they need the power of God to be on this place. And they need a church that is praying. And they need a church that is giving. And they need preachers that are preaching just as much today as we needed it back then. And it's dangerous to live in the past. And that's what Haggai was saying to them. Boy, I think of a church like ours. It's a historic church. It's a church that has been active for a long time. A church that has been used by God. And that is wonderful. It's awesome. But it's dangerous. The danger is we live in the past. That's the danger. You know, I've been here for 7 or 8 years, and I love it, man. I love working here. I love serving the Lord here. I'm not sure where my wife is. She's back here somewhere, but I can remember the first, there she is right back there. I can remember after a month or two of being here and saying to Minda, this is going to sound weird, but I think we were busier in West Virginia than we are here. This is going to be easy. And then it hit me. All right. But I love it. I love working here. But here in Hammond, like every idea has already been done. We've swallowed goldfish. We've passed out baby chickens. We've packed pews. We've dropped filet of fish sandwiches from helicopters from the sky. All right. I don't know that you can do a whole lot more than that. We've honored veterans and first responders after 9/11. We brought the Taste of Chicago here to the Taste on State. I mean, it doesn't matter what idea we can scheme up. It's been done. And that's wonderful. But my question is this, church, my question is this. I'm thankful for what's been done in the past, but what about now? What about today? People need Jesus today. Somebody needs to surrender their life today. Someone still needs to be burdened for the next generation today. People today need to give and work and preach and pray and weep and beg God. It needs to happen today. And there is a great danger in sitting back. And if we're not careful, it's everything that we used to do, used to be. But what's happening today? And see, a few months can become a few years, and soon 14 years have passed by. Very little's been done for the cause of Christ. And so there is a danger. So he preached number one. He preached, don't wait when you should be working. Number two, don't live in the past and miss the future. One man said, it's impossible to unlock the present with the rusty key of the past. And I would agree with that. There's a third danger. There's a danger in seeing only the material and neglecting the supernatural. And that was happening with these people. They had convinced themselves that they didn't have enough money. They didn't have enough materials. They were short on supply. And so Haggai comes along in chapter 2, verse number 8, and he reminds them, the silver is mine and the gold is mine, saith the Lord. You see, don't just look at what you don't have. You need to remember the supernatural. Don't look at what you don't have. Remember who you do have. And that's something that we need to do today. I mean, if the house of God is going to be built and if the work of God is going to advance, we need to take our eyes off of everything that we don't have and we need to place our eyes on the one that we do have. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, the wealth in every mine, the silver is his, the gold is his. And hey, that's where our attention needs to be. What makes something great is not how big it is. What makes it great is if the Lord is there. And if the Lord is in it, And see, these people were just remembering that past temple and thinking about how big and ornate it was and realizing they don't have those resources now to build something like that. But God was saying, you have me. And that's enough. Amen. And friends, that's a good message for youth conference. I mean, I'm thankful for the thousands of people that have registered in the past. And I think it is awesome. But listen, however many people are going to be here the next few days, it's not about what happened in the past. It's about Jesus being here, right here and now, right here and now. And don't forget the supernatural. Don't neglect the supernatural. Yeah, how many of you believe that God is alive and well? Would you raise your hand? How many of you believe that he is interested in what happens in people's lives today? Would you raise your hand? Hey, that we've got to remember that. We've got to pray like that. And we need to realize that there could be another Rick Martin in the crowd, and there could be another Kevin Wynn in the crowd. There could be another Pastor Wilkerson in the crowd, and our attention needs to not be on what we don't have or what goes wrong. Our attention needs to be on who we have and the supernatural power of God. My wife is here, and I remember we first moved to West Virginia. When we first moved there, within days of being there, we didn't have much money, and within days of being there, our either washer broke or our washer and dryer broke. I forget which one, but some appliance that I don't use, it broke. And I remember walking in and Minda saying, you know, we've got a problem, and the washing machine is broke. And I was like, oh man. And I looked at her, I'm like 23 years old. I said, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And I don't know that she said this exactly, but in my mind, she said something similar to, what are we going to do? You're the man. You're the preacher. I mean, what are we going to do? You're going to pray. She said something like that. And I remember thinking, yeah, we'll pray. We've got it. God's got it. It's all good. God's got it. And man, going back and God, you need to get it. because she thinks that I'm a preacher I don't know what she thinks, but I don't have any money for a washer and dryer. There needs to be something happening soon. Like 2 or 3 days tops, God. We're going to need to wash some clothes. And I can remember praying and just nothing. And one day walking to the mailbox across the street there. I lived right there on church property. Brother Manning, you've been there. Walking to the mailbox right across the street, 303 9th Avenue, opened up the mailbox, seeing an envelope from USF Distribution. This envelope, and that's where I used to work. And I'm thinking, man, USF, it had been a long time since I've been there, weeks, maybe a few months. And I'm like, what's this envelope from USF doing, you know? And I opened it up, and it was some back pay. It was money that the company owed me, and it was enough to buy that appliance. Now, friend, that might seem like nothing to you, but how often does a company actually pay you money that they owe you, you know, when you leave town? I mean, they knew I was gone, and I can remember walking the 100 yards from that mailbox to the house, and I can remember walking that with that envelope in my hand, And just walking inside thinking, man, God has answered prayer. And taking it and walking in and Minda. And she came and I said, here, there it is. Oh, what is it? I said, look at it. And it was a check from USF Distribution, and it was just enough money to buy an appliance, and her eyes got big. And I remember thinking, yeah, that is right. That's right. I'm the man. I prayed it down. No, listen, that's not true. Both of us looked to God and said, man, God, you are awesome. And it's not about what we don't have. It's about who we do have. And boy, if you would get a hold of that tonight, it could be revolutionary. Don't find your satisfaction in how big something is. Find your satisfaction in the fact that the Lord is with you, that he's using you. And he said, so there's a danger in seeing only the material and neglecting the supernatural. And last, and I'll be done in a couple of minutes. The last message was this: there is a danger and recognizing who is against us and forgetting who is for us. Chapter 2, verse number 20. This word came straight to Zerubbabel. And again, the word of the Lord came unto Haggai in the 4th and 20th day of the month, saying, speak to Zerubbabel, governor of Judah. By the way, this was a message for the leaders. Zerubbabel was a leader. It says, here's 3 sermons for the people. Now go to the leader. Go straight to Zerubbabel and say this. The governor of Judah saying, I will shake the heavens and the earth. And I will overthrow the throne of kingdoms, and I will destroy the strength of the kingdoms of the heathen, and I will overthrow the chariots and those that ride in them, and the horses and their riders shall come down, every one by the sword of his brother. And that day, saith the Lord of hosts, will I take thee, O Zerubbabel, my servant, the son of Shealtiel, saith the Lord, and will make thee as a signet, for I have chosen thee, saith the Lord of hosts. He said, I want you to go to the leader. I want you to go to Zerubbabel himself, and I want you to remind him, don't look at the enemy. Don't look at the Samaritans. Don't look at the opposition. Don't look at the people on the internet. Remind him it's not about who's against us. Remind him who is for him. And we still serve a God that can shake the heavens and the earth, a God that can overthrow the kingdoms. It's not about, you know, it's getting dark out there. And I have thought as a parent, man, it is hard to raise a family. It's hard to raise children in this day and age with all the sin and all the mess. How are we going to do it? It's like opposition on every side of the home. But it's not about the opposition. It's not about who's against us. It is about reminding us who is for us. And that's the Lord. And he can still shake heaven and earth. And he still wants to make us a signet, like a stamp, a representation. He still wants to look at the old church downtown and put his stamp of approval on it and say, I can still shake heaven and earth. I can do it right here. I can do it at youth conference. We can still see great altar calls and moves of God. And don't just dwell on who's against you. Dwell on who's for you. Remember who's for you. I think about all the people, single mothers. And I was raised in a single parent home all of my teenage years. I think about single mothers and my mom working 2 jobs and just the constant struggle to provide. We need to remember not what's against us, but who is for us. Parents, Pastor Wilkerson, and leaders. It's not just about those that oppose the work of God. We need to get our minds off of them. We need to never forget who is for us. And when we remember those things, here's what happens. 4 simple truths, 4 sermons. God sent a preacher to deliver 4 truths. And they were heard, believed, and responded to. And the house of God was built. God didn't send a therapist or a counselor, and all that stuff is fine and dandy. Didn't send any of that. He said, preach some sermons. And if the people will respond, the house of God will be built. And I believe that even though it was back in Haggai's day, I believe the message applies to us today. As the sermons are preached in the power of God, as you listen and respond, it won't take long for God to get back to work and for the house of God to be built. Would you bow your heads, please, and close your eyes?